The United Nations was an organization that was established in the aftermath of World War II in order to take all of the lessons of the failure of the League of Nations and also the world that was possible and emerging within the context of post-colonialism. Okay. So before World War II, and to understand what we're really talking about is actually the question. So thanks for listening, and let me back up. Is Russia and China, or are Russia and China, excuse my grammar, are Russia and China and a few other countries, are Brazil, India, South Africa is important right now, it's natural resources. But it needs some more political stability. But these are called the BRICS countries. And they are the ones that have been actually building an alternative to the deep state global bankers cabal run through the IMF, of which the World Economic Forum is the think tank. Does that make sense? So now the issue is that things get conflated and our understandings get messed up. Okay, because the UN and the World Economic Forum are not at all the same thing. And the World Economic Forum is not a committee or department or subset of the UN. Okay, and let me start by trying to give an analogy using UN security resolutions and US actions. Okay, so there was a UN security resolution on Iraq about their commitments post first war in the early 90s and possession of biological chemical weapons. Okay, that was a UN Security Council resolution. Okay, the US went in to Iraq based on that. Based is the like not legitimized by, I'm just saying, like tangentially based on that resolution, but there was not a UN Security Council resolution that authorized the US to go in on a use of force. They actually claimed national security, that it was a threat to the U weapons of mass destruction was a threat to the national, threat to the US. So they used those kind of more general framing ideas in international law, but twisted it because it has to be like a realistic threat and it has to be an operationalizable threat. Just like somebody just getting mad at you in a bar saying, I'm going to kill you, but he's so drunk and he's actually half passed out and you can leave the bar right then and there. He doesn't even know your name. That doesn't mean that you can go to the police and, get the prosecuting DA to charge him for, planning to murder you or attempted murder. You see what I'm saying? So just think about it like that. And the point being that the US used that to go in and do whatever. But countries were agreed, like through the UN Security Council, the permanent members and the voting members, the rotating members, were agreed about Iraq should not have weapons of mass destruction. Does that make sense? Okay. So now understand this. So the UN, right, is composed of, 100 and I don't know, 94 countries or something like that, okay? Give or take a couple. It's always changing. It's been a while since I was in school, and that number doesn't come up all the time for me. But it's around there. It's about 5 or 10 less than 200, okay? So these nearly 200 countries of the world all have a seat at the UN. Okay, and a lot of these countries, most of them are subordinate in some way, but to varying degrees, and the nuance matters tremendously to the IMF, which is the transatlantic banking cabal. All right, they use the CIA, the deep state, to do these murders and overthrow, or they do color revolutions and all this stuff you've been learning about in during this Great Awakening. And so it's important to understand, though, that the UN Agenda 2030 developmental goals at the UN are, first of all, very generic. They're very basic platforms that are really not anything that are in the bad interest of these countries. And I know that sounds weird because you're thinking about a different Agenda 2030. Just like when the US deep state went into Iraq and claimed UN Security Council to justify his actions, okay? The World Economic Forum's version of Agenda 2030 is not the same thing as the UN's Agenda 2030. But when layman researchers, who, and God bless them, when they look online to find publicly sourced information, to write otherwise very decent analysis about Agenda 2030, what they find is the UN Agenda 2030, not the World Economic Forum's Agenda 2030. And the thing is that the World Economic Forum's Agenda 2030 makes consistent, parallel, overlapping, and legitimizing references to the UN's Agenda 2030. Okay? So if you actually knew what the UN Agenda 2030 was, you would be like, oh, those are basically reasonable because they are the real existing needs of the developing world. Clean water, democracy, constitutions with elections that are real, not fake, functioning institutions, law enforcement, safety, rule of law, I said transparency, clean air, but not because of thinking that the world is getting warmer or the world, you see what I'm saying? Clean air is a different thing, right? Like fracking and these things that actually, if they are, you know, fracking in the US is actually surprisingly much more regulated and clean. And so that I'm not trying to confuse on that debate. But in the developing world, it can actually like really mess things up a lot, right? So they do have things that are like, hey, when, you know, if we had like half the regulations, like the US might be doubly overly regulated, right? But if they're like, if we had half the regulations that the US had on some of these things, we'd be better off, and they probably would. That nothing to do with these other things. And let me, and but they overlap and they can sound confusing, okay? Because there is, because you have the World Health Organization, which involves in these things about like vaccination and you know, women and children's health and so forth, right? But the thing to keep in mind, okay, is that the UN, right, is a independent body, and the thing about the World Health Organization is that even though it has it's a structure that was built into the United Nations, okay, the only thing that's binding at the United Nations are the resolutions of the UN Security Council. And the UN at the level of the General Assembly, which has empowered these different UN organizations, okay, is actually controlled very much by the deep states of the countries that have that whose corporations and intelligence organizations and have the most control. Okay? So the other thing to keep in mind is that even the UN's version of Agenda 2030 is non-binding. Okay? And the World Economic Forum's version of Agenda 2030 can only be binding on countries that accept being bound by that through bilateral agreements separate from the UN. Like if the IMF pressures a country that's developing to accept the World Economic Forum's version of Agenda 2030, it is done so and it is sold back to the people in those countries as being like, well, this is in line with the UN's Agenda 2030. But it's the World Economic Forum that makes the argument that their version of implementation of these more vague and general things about the UN Agenda 2030 are the way to interpret it and implement it. So the IMF comes in, its think tank is the World Economic Forum, okay? And it will say, well, you have to do these things to make yourself more profitable for us, or you have to do this and that to your country to qualify for further IMF loans, which is a separate issue because it creates a cycle of dependency and so forth, and austerity. But the World Economic Forum, it only has power through what it gets the IMF to require of countries. But the IMF, our private bank, is a our you know collection of private centralized large banks, not government banks, not the Federal Reserve, but the big largest private banks that attempt to control central banks and private banks all around the world, but they don't. Okay, they attempt to. That's very key. So now all these different alphabet soup organizations within the UN, which do not include the World Economic Forum. This is entirely separate, once again, entirely separate, okay? But the World Health Organization gets 10% of its financing from Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda, Gates Foundation, okay? And so then they had tremendous influence over very basic things that now, look, this is a paradigm question, and now people who have come to some conclusions on their own about what vaccines really are or what viruses really are, if it was actually just the improvement of the Human Development Index that saw the reduction of transmittable diseases, and if just, vaccines just kind of came along with that and took credit for it, that's fine. That's a different argument, okay? But before 1986, okay, a lot of vaccines that were out there are considered to be generally safe for a lot of people, and that even though there are whatever bad things that happen, the idea is the number of people that avoid these very life-threatening illnesses is greater than the smaller number of people who have adverse effects. I'm just telling you what the rationale was, and you can see how that rationale was perverted into upside down, grotesque upside down world, and I think all of us would be on the same page about that. But just understanding the basics for the pre-1986, pre-1985 vaccine schedules were considered very important for the developing world, okay? And so that's the thing, is that there are if a but if a country is more sovereign, and this is actually the critical part, if a country is more sovereign, okay, and it has signed up, like it is, like when the UN General Assembly, there was actually no vote. Also, by the way, like here's another thing. Even though the UN General Assembly's votes are non-binding, okay, there actually was never a vote, even at the level of General Assembly, on UN Agenda 2030. There was no vote on it, okay? It's just a series of very basic things. For global development goals, okay, sustainable development goals, SDGs, okay, that are not very controversial if a sovereign country has the right to interpret them as they see fit. Does that make sense? Okay, it should, because if a country is like not very sovereign, then it's the World Economic Forum through the IMF enforcement, like you don't qualify for loans, that gets to determine how those things are implemented, okay? But and that's even if there was something at the UN General Assembly that would even lead you to think that countries should be compelled to, even though the structures of the UN don't even require that. So I know that we're talking about three or four different things, but that all of these reinforce the case that simply because a country wrote a had someone speak at one of these many hundreds of subcommittees that the UN has, and some of them are grotesquely controlled. Like they put Saudi Arabia for a while, I think it might still be in charge of protecting like the world historical sites, even though they were financing the same Salafists that were actually destroying world historical sites relating to Islam and stuff like that in the Middle East, Right? That's crazy, right? So these can be very corrupted, but that's okay because countries are not required to allow those institutions to work in their country as they see fit. They're always subordinate to the sovereign ability of a country to regulate or even disallow the work of those different UN alphabet soup organizations in their country, because they basically work the same way as NGOs. And they can get and wind up being philanthropized and financed very similarly to NGOs. So the more sovereign a country is, the more meaningless what the World Economic Forum or the IMF thinks should be the definition of these things, which in the first place were non-binding. Does that, they're only binding if the IMF says they are, and they're just using like the public discourse of the UN language to kind of justify it as if it's required by the UN. And it confuses people into thinking that these are UN requirements when they're not UN requirements. And they were non-binding at any level. And they came out of a committee, not even the General Assembly. So in the future, I will discuss the nature of maybe the last big meeting on implementation of the UN SDGs, also called UN Agenda 2030, which was through a parallel organization called COP26 conference, which again, not UN or not UN binding. I don't even think it was UN. I'll look again. I don't want to be ignorant about this. But at any rate, you can see that. Just because there was a Chinese or Russian or whatever, or even American, like under Trump, right, representative at these meetings, because you have hundreds of diplomats. It's not like Lavrov or whatever was there at these meetings. You see what I'm saying? Like these embassies at the UN have like hundreds of staffers so that they can each attend and be part of all these different smaller UN committees. It's all like committees, kind of like how there's congressional committees and stuff like that. But they make recommendations to the Congress, right? And then the Congress maybe will vote on it, or they'll table it, or it will never see the light of day. But there's all these congressional committees with all these congressional staffers, and the congressmen don't even sit on the meetings themselves, but all their different, like, whatever people who work in the congressional office do. That's how kind of like the UN works, okay? So a lot of stuff that comes out of UN gobbledygook and chit chatter from newspapers and media are just coming out of UN committees. And UN Agenda 2030 sovereign development goals, the stable development goals or sovereign development goals, whatever they are, the SDGs, are not at all binding. Again, they're non-binding. So it's a sign of goodwill and good toke, like that, you know, that we're in, on this committee. Because see, other countries that have more sovereignty can involve in these committees, and they can inform less sovereign countries like, this is how you can implement these if you want, and advise them against following what the World Economic Forum says implementation of those looks like. And sovereign countries that sit on the UN committees relating to UN Agenda 2030, they can help countries develop towards those goals. Then those bureaucrats and whatever who work for that country representation at the UN can type up a report and say, yeah, we increased access of, you know, of education for the children of, you know, of single moms or something by 30% between these years, blah, 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 blah. We increase the number of shoes on barefoot children by 15%, blah, 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 blah. So that's the main framework for understanding. There's no commitment there, and it's vastly interpreted to be whatever you want to make it. The more sovereign your government is, the more power you have to determine what that looks like, and it's totally voluntary. It's not like you have to implement some version of it. That's what's there's so many layers of voluntariness to this that it's almost meaningless. It's the scary thing is what the World Economic Forum says these things are. And yeah, they have a lot of influence into some of the white papers and language and things that come out of the committees, but it's not at all mandatory at all. So that's the main thinking.